Hey everybody, Rick here from Fueled by the Outdoors, and I'm here to tell you about a wonderful company, Satty's Custom Ammunition and Gun Works. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads lately. I've been using the Satty's Fatties turkey loads, and I got to tell you, they stop a bird dead. Chris used a 20 gauge this year. I used a 12. Josh used a 20. And my son actually killed one with a 410 this year with one of Satty's loads. And my God, do they put the birds down like crazy. Aaron Satterfield and his family have a wide-ranging array of ammunition, custom game loads, predator loads, turkey loads, the Satty's Fatty, and also they do gun work. Please get a hold of them with any questions that you have in terms of your custom ammunition needs. Go to SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com and tell them that Rick from Fueled by the Outdoors sent you.
Recurve buck down, baby. Oh my gosh, that was freaking awesome.
This is my first public land buck. This is my second sit of the season.
Okay, oh my gosh, I just heard him fall.
I just shot my Kentucky buck.
And Seth, just to be clear, yours is called Niche TV, right?
Niche. Well, yeah, if you say it niche, I don't know. Is Josh, is that the correct pronunciation? Is it niche or is it?
People,
I should probably say the right word for my channel name.
I would go with niche.
Niche
is not.
Niche is trying to French it up too much.
Isn't that a breakfast? Isn't that like a breakfast?
That would be quiche.
Okay. I'm from the sticks, man. We eat ham and bacon where I come from.
I don't even want to cut this out. I'm being honest.
Well, it was Fueled by the Outdoors. We're your hosts, Rick Cates, Chris Leppert, and Josh Luck.
What up, though?
Hey, everyone.
And we are joined tonight by Seth Drake of Niche TV. Seth, how's it going?
It's going, guys. I appreciate you having me on. There's been some pretty big names on here. I feel like you're scraping the bottom of the barrel here, but here we are.
You know, some of the best stuff is found at the bottom of the pot.
That's what I hear.
Don't worry, Seth. We got about 7 listeners. We might be up to 8 now. So.
Oh, shit. Well, you know. I won't disappoint too many people then.
If you ask Rick, they're all women, too. I don't know if you ever heard us talk about that on here, but... Back in the day when we started, Rick thought we had all these woman listeners, and we figured out
30% of our listener base.
Everybody was using their wives' account to listen to the podcast.
By everybody, I mean 2 people, because that's accounted for 30% of our listener base.
Yeah, Rick
It's like when you look at the analytics and stuff, it's like. Male, female, non-binary, doesn't specify. And now it's all like men between ages 28 and 36. Like that is our prime listening group. And then it jumps back up. Like I think in guys in their 60s, it's really,
yeah, I like hearing about that though, because, you know, it's kind of, I feel like podcasts nowadays are a new generation thing, and I like hearing about the older guys that are listening to podcasts and learning from younger guys, because I know, like, I don't want to get into it too much because I know we're going to talk about it anyway, but like my dad and my grandpa and the way I grew up, they're kind of old school, you know, I don't want to say they're closed-minded, but they're very set in their ways. And now I feel like podcasts especially, and just technology as a whole, you got guys that are changing the game and the flow of things. And it's cool to hear about older guys that are, you know, getting on board with that and kind of being more open-minded to teaching the old dogs new tricks, if you will. So
absolutely. I think it's important that it's great to learn from your elders, but it's great to learn from guys coming up as well, because you can learn a lot of new things.
Yeah.
And coming from somebody like myself, who's very much set in my ways of doing things and trying to break out of stuff, it's mm-hmm. helpful to listen to new people outside of Josh and Chris. So
they do know a few things though. They're pretty decent to listen to.
But enough about us, Seth. So tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us, you know, how you got involved in the outdoors and just you in general, and kind of give us a rundown.
Okay. Well, I'm 26. I killed my first deer when I was 8 on public land, national forest ground, in Southern Ohio hill country. I'm not from hill country per se. I'm more of a, I guess you'd call me probably West Central Ohio, more of the ag land. We've got some rolling hills, but it's generally pretty flat compared to what I'm used to hunting. Grew up, my first few years hunting public with my dad was, we would usually go in the night before and hang two man, you know, hang on set. Mm-hmm. And by we hang it, he would hang it, my dad. And I would stand on the ground and get yelled at for not holding the light in the right spot. and then as I got older, once I got stronger, moved to a summit climber, like, you know, everybody did in the early to mid 2000s. And that was kind of, so I guess you could say I've always kind of been a mobile hunter, just, you know, it looked a little different back then. But cut my teeth on public, learned, hill country deer kind of right out of the gate. And then, never really had access to much private up here where I'm at. Most of the parcels are pretty small. If you got a big parcel, it's probably getting leased, or everybody and their brother has permission. If you get a yes here, everybody else got a yes too. And you might as well be hunting walk in public. That's just the way it is. So, you know, for me growing up, public just made sense as far as an acreage standpoint. I could at least, you know, we could go down there and get away from people. Whereas up here, you know, you might have the place to yourself, but you got a property line not too far away, or you have a decent piece of land and everyone else is hunting it anyway. So you might as well just go the public route. So, but, yeah, just kind of grew up in it. Hunting and fishing since I started fishing and hunting small game when I was real little, and then started deer and turkeys. My first turkey I killed when I was 10, in the National Forest in Kentucky, which is about the roughest place a kid could possibly hunt turkeys. Yep. But it worked out. So I guess I got pretty rough beginnings from the start. I mean, I killed them in kind of some of the hardest places you could kill them. So it was always good for me going anywhere else. It felt easier to get on deer and kill them because it, you know, from a terrain aspect and just a, aspect of hunting a little bit lower deer densities than other parts of the state. It made things a lot easier for me. So.
Heck yeah, man. That really hits home, because what you said about the private permission pieces, I always used to get so excited. Oh man, I got permission to hunt here.
Oh, yeah.
That's a list called everybody.
Yeah.
That can be pretty rough.
Yeah. Yeah. I had a place 2 years ago that was 800 acres here in the county that I live in. 5 minutes from my house. And, the guy signed a slip for me on the spot, and every time I went out there was a different truck there. And I finally got asked the farmer, I said, you know, how many guys do you got hunting this? He goes, well, usually 10 to 12 a year gun season, there's usually, I'll sign 3 or 4 more slips. So you're talking about 15 guys, you know, that just all they did was ask the guy if they could hunt. I'm like, oh, it's like, well, okay, I think I'll just pull all my cameras before they get stolen, because I think they're more apt to get stolen here than they are on public.
Yeah.
Because these guys will get more pissed than the guys on public would. So I kind of just pulled everything out of there, and that farm ended up getting sold actually at the end of the season. So now no one hunts it.
Was that ag property?
Yeah, it was ag.
Boxwoods.
What's that?
Like boxwoods and woodlot type.
Yeah, I call. What do you mean, like scrub trees, like sycamores, cottonwood, like stuff like that, or?
What I'm saying is, like in farm country, you have like little squares of woods.
Surrounded by ag. Yeah. Everybody was hunting pretty much the main, 25-acre block of woods, but I was hunting a little 3-acre patch that was thick as hell down by the river, and that's where all the big deer were, and nobody was going back there. So, cause you had to use a boat or waders to get in there, and that was just too much work instead of parking your truck and walking 200 yards to the wood lot next to Billy Bob. So
that sounds amazing. My knees and ankles think that sounds great.
Yeah.
So you're talking about accessing stuff through water. So how you've been mobile for a good portion of your hunting, career. You said you were using a Summit climber. What is your kind of setup that you use now, or that you've kind of come into within the past, 5 to 6 years?
Well, just 3 years ago, I was a guy that said you'd never catch me in a saddle and now you'd never catch me out of one. So it's one of those things, and, I'm not trying to beat the bush on any particular product or company or anything like that, but I started out 3 years ago, when I went really, wanted to start hunting out of state and I have a goal that I think only Aaron Satterfield might know about it, to be honest with you, but I'll say it on here. My goal, we'll have to try it again next year, I guess, at home, but my goal was to kill a 120 or better on a different piece of public in Ohio every year from here out. So I just want
a pretty good goal.
I want to kill a buck and move on. And Ohio is a state that you can get on pretty much any kind of habitat type you want to hunt. Ohio probably has it somewhere or another, to an extent. So, started a couple of years ago wanting to really get out of state and travel around the state and kill deer in different places. I tried some light, lock on hang and hunt kind of deal stands. Just couldn't find a system that really worked for me as far as attaching sticks to stands and stands to packs and things like that. And it was a struggle for me. That year I didn't kill. I changed up my setup probably. It seemed like every hunt I had something attached differently, and I just never got comfortable with my setup. And then we fast forward. So that would have been 2021 or 2020, maybe. I can't remember. So fast forward to 2022 last year. I knew that wasn't working out. Yeah, I had seen enough guys using a saddle in videos that it was one of those things where I almost felt like I knew how to use a saddle without ever having been in one, because you watch guys set up and use them so many times, you kind of know how they operate. And I go to Mobile Hunters Expo, a couple decent guys run that show. I get lucky enough to win a raffle for a Trophy Line Covert Light kit, which... I think there were three different saddles I kind of decided I wanted to maybe get into, after trying a bunch on that weekend. And that was one of them. So got lucky enough to buy two tickets and win that, which I don't ever win anything like that. So that was like a lottery. I might as well won the Mega Millions for me. I remember getting that text while I was out scouting actually the next day about winning that. So, I got the saddle and everything, and last year was, I got it in time to practice all summer. And anybody that's listening to this wanting to get into any kind of mobile hunt, this is just mobile hunting in general, whether it's a stand, a saddle, a climber. I know there's a few guys that still use the climbers. The big thing is when you're before the season, make sure that you're comfortable with your setup. You figure out how you want to attach everything, how you want to carry everything, how you want things staged while you're climbing, and how you need to set things up in the tree based on the gear that you decide to carry to make it efficient to where you can, for one, get a shot off, because you wouldn't believe how many times you can screw yourself setting up wrong in the tree at hunting height. Mm-hmm. And until, and then another thing, like once you're up there, you know, draw your bow, figure out, you know, how your gear dimensions and your body dimensions and what's going to work for you and what's not. And that's a huge thing that I practiced last year in the summer, so that when opening day came around, or when my first hunt came around for the year, I'm not just putting my stuff on the tree for the first time, trying to figure this out in the dark and getting pissed off because I'm trying to beat everyone there and I can hear the trucks pulling in the gravel lots. And I know we better get it together here because if you get irritated, that makes things go a lot worse for you. I'm not a particularly patient person. You can ask my wife that. I am a bit of a hothead most of the time. And getting mad because you didn't prepare is a good way to go downhill quickly. So last year, first year in the saddle, I felt pretty comfortable right out of the gate with it because, you know, I spent the summer trying to get everything worked out. This year I was in the Vanatic from Trophy Line. Got affiliated with those guys. They've been taking good care of me. That's a great partnership with me. I switched over from the Covert Light to the Vanatic. Switched my platform to a little bit bigger platform.
What are you using?
I'm using the Wingman, which is our smallest platform. It's designed to be modified to be used as a one stick if you want to.
Okay.
So it is still very compact. For me, I mean, I'm, you know, I might one stick one of these days. I probably will eventually, but for now, my system I've got down really good with, two minis, and then the Wingman essentially has a stick, you know, on the bottom of it as it's designed to be a one stick. So with the
aiders on those?
Yeah, I have three-step aiders. With the three-step aiders and the two minis and the Wingman platform, my max height that I can get is around 22 feet if I really stretch it out. But I'll be honest with you, that second mini ends up usually being on the ground because it doesn't often make it up the tree, especially early season like this. Really, if you get much higher than, you know, 13 to 15 feet most of the places I'm at, you're not going to have a shot. You got to stay low. Use those lower branches, that lower canopy, to cover up your legs and a lot of your movement. And if you get much higher than that, you're taking away your shooting windows. And that's kind of stuff that you learn that as you go. It's hard to account for that when you're climbing the, you know, telephone pole or the pine tree in your backyard. But you get out there, you get a few hunts, and you kind of realize, you look at the tree before you climb and say, okay, like, you know, how high do I really need to get? Because I don't want to take my options away here. But that's a big thing for me, is just preparing before the season with your setup. Figure out what works. Figure out what the hell makes noise on your setup is a big deal. You would not believe all the little pieces of like exposed plastic and metal that make the loudest noise that you could imagine in the woods. Get that stuff figured out and make sure that when it's go time, it, you know, every time we climb a tree, it's to kill. That's got to be the mentality that you have. And to get the job done, confidence is a big thing. And that starts in your setup for me, making sure that everything is stealth stripped. Everything is, you know, bundled up tight and hung in a place where you can get to it fast, but it's not out there flailing around and catching on stuff and making a bunch of noise, because you can screw yourself long before you even get in the tree. The tree doesn't matter if you can't get in it clean and you can't, you know, if you can't get to it clean and you can't get up it clean, the tree really doesn't matter. So
absolutely.
I didn't tell you guys this. I forgot last week when I was out Thursday, when I went in scouting and hunted like the last hour, I was a foot and a half off the ground. It's the lowest I've ever been. Other than actually
the
being
cool
on
part
the
is you can't really get lower than that without sitting on the ground. So I can't say too much because I think I told you. Not my first hunt in Kentucky, but probably my third hunt in Kentucky. Again, you know, go to this place, can't find a freaking tree to get into. So I picked a locust tree, like, know, this big around, you know, for those that obviously can't see me, it's like 4 or 5 inches in diameter tops. And I think I went, like, I put a stick barely off the ground on the tree and then hung my platform right above that stick. Like, I couldn't go anywhere. It sucked. Now, I later went back there and did the old SRT up into an absolute mega chinkapin. But even that sucked, man. I sat in a tree stand, but I could only put that on a limb. And the limbs are, like, going out like that. So, there, you know, there's no adjustment for that.
Nope.
Like, you can only do so much. So, yeah, there's just nowhere to sit there. It's rough. Anyway.
Yeah, that piece of Publix, it's a pain in the ass. It really is.
Pain in my bunghole, man. I'm, like, not looking forward to muzzleloader season, but I am. I don't know. We'll see. Hopefully, Cora, hopefully these people that hate my guts that schedule these damn volleyball games during turkey season and during the first 6 weeks of deer season, like, hopefully they get these times to where, like, I'd like to see them start in the morning and be done at, like, 3 o'clock. Well, please God, give me the evening. If I can't have the morning, can I please have the evening? Please.
I took my kids to the dentist today, and they're like, 6 months from now is turkey season. So they're like, oh, like, when do you want to schedule? And I'm sitting there, like, doing the math in my head. I'm like, well, first week of April's, like, when I normally go fishing, and then youth turkey's going to come in on this weekend, and Kentucky's coming in on this weekend, and Ohio's coming on this weekend. So I'm like, what's a day that I can get? Like, they're like, do you want spring break? I'm like, absolutely not. It's like, I don't want it to interfere with anything that I could potentially have time off for. Like, do it like at 1:30 on a Tuesday or something like that. That'll work out well. So speaking of getting out in the woods and using your setup, you put down a nice buck in Ohio last year on public land. If I'm not mistaken, is he there? He is.
Yeah, he's right here.
Nice.
He's pretty decent.
Yeah, so, absolutely. Absolutely. So tell us, you know, like, cause you started on, if I'm not mistaken, you started in one part of the state, then went to a different part of the state.
Yep.
After you kind of figured out some different things that you wanted to try. So,
yeah,
kind of give our listeners an idea of, you know, what you started with, how you came to the conclusion to, like basically change up everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, what strategies or techniques did you kind of utilize in order to hunt and kill that buck?
Well, so I'm trying to remember my dates here. I believe I killed that deer on November 8th. I think I had been hunting every day since October 28th, I think. I think that's my first day that I started. I started on some public a little closer to where I live to start. Some place that I was just trying to figure out. I had killed a doe there early season and knew there were some good bucks in the area. And I was still in proximity to some good bucks. I ran into about 150 inch deer the first day, of my rutcation, if you will, as much as I hate that term. I ran into one in the rain the first day and, you know, decided to hunt that area for a couple of days. And the pressure was, I might as well have been hunting Michigan. There were guys everywhere. Like, every time I got into a set that I felt like, okay, this could be the set, there would, you know, be another guy walk in an hour after sunrise to set up for an hour and a half and then go eat Bob Evans. And I was like, this is not going to work. I am not going to spend 2 weeks doing this. So I just went back to Southern Ohio. I went back to the hills. I went back to what I know, you know, some historical places growing up with my dad that I had hunted, and places that you can generally, like, I will bet I don't have a lot of money, but I would bet as much as I could bet that they would produce deer every year. And I hadn't been down there at all until, you know, the rut, till, you know, that first week in November. And I had been hearing, which you guys all know, hunting mainly down there, the mast crop last year was terrible, pretty much non-existent. And I had been hearing that, and I didn't grasp how bad it was until I got there, and I spent an entire day walking the spots that we generally always kill deer in, and there was not a single acorn. I didn't find one in a full day of scouting, not a single one. So I knew that was not going to work. I think I threw a sit at a spot that we have killed a deer. I'm pretty sure we've killed one every single sit, and that's between me and my dad, probably 50 or 60 sits over the years. We've shot a deer every time on it. I sat that the first evening just to see, and I saw two fawns, and I knew, like, okay, this is, we gotta just beat feet and burn some boot leather, because this ain't gonna work. I went and scouted an area that we had watched bucks cross from private onto public for years, big deer all the time. Scouted that, no acorns, some sign, but no acorns really, and I didn't feel good about the sign. So then I got just a wild hare, which I do that often. I always have a plan, and it changes 36 times before I do something.
It sounds a lot like someone else on this podcast.
I knew of an area that I had driven by before that was entirely different. It was not hardwoods. I don't want to give too much away, but it was not hardwoods. It was big timber cuts, pretty new timber cuts, so mainly CRP for a lot of acres. And I said, you know what, this is just something different. Like, I'm not on them anyway where I'm at, so why not? Like, we'll just go see what happens. And got into deer pretty much right away. I initially had the plan that I was going to try to, you know, glass deer and figure out how they were moving in and out of these draws and try to put some pieces of the puzzle together on how to get in there and get on them. Ended up blowing a shit ton of deer out. Just there were deer everywhere. I just couldn't get. So I picked a draw that looked pretty good. And I did actually find some oaks down in there finally. That was like the only draw, and they were pin oaks. Not necessarily a premier food source, but they're only oaks that I found, and all the sign was there. The way the thermals were, I didn't want to hunt that spot in an evening. I felt that wasn't going to be very beneficial. If you don't know an area well, it can be hard to predict thermals. You guys hunt hill country, you know that. You've put a plan together of what the thermals should do, and then they don't do that. So initially, the first morning I hunted it, I sat until about nine, not, I don't even know if it was nine, it was probably 8:30, way earlier, like a time the first week of November when you probably shouldn't get out of the tree. And I didn't feel good. The tree just didn't feel like the tree. I was on a good rub line, but I just didn't feel like I had quite the sign I probably should have been on. So I got down, and I only moved, I don't know, 150 yards. I think it was maybe even less than that, just around a low logging road. And immediately when I got to that hub, the sign was kind of what I was looking for, you know, as far as it really picked up. And you could tell that where I was previously was where one of the bucks decided to go, but where I ended up was where all of the bucks were coming from. And, you know, I felt like, okay, this is where I need to be. And about the time I started looking around for a tree that would work, about 160 inch deer ran a doe right by me at sub 50 yards, buck roared, chased her all over the country. And I thought, well, I probably shouldn't go anywhere because he's dogging a doe in here. And if I stay in the mix, it's only a matter of time before that deer dies or another one that's in here trying to, you know, move in on her. There's a hot doe, so you really shouldn't move first week in November. I mean, I think pretty much everyone's on the same page there. So I got in a tree that afternoon. I decided to let him do his thing and move off. I heard him run off. I got some lunch and I felt like I could, I found a tree that would work for an evening sit. Obviously I'm in down in the hub a little more now. And I set up, and the deer that I killed actually was the only deer I saw that evening. And he came through the hub and he hit a logging road that I couldn't see from where I was. It was just a little bit below me around the military crest. And I thought, okay, like I was just off wind and I felt like in the morning, the wind was going to be consistent with what it was that forecasted that day. So it was kind of a guess, but I felt like I knew what it would do in the mornings based on what it was doing that evening. Made an adjustment, picked a tree before dark for the next day and got in it clean. And I came down the same trail, the opposite direction. And I shot him at, I think, like 8:30 in the morning. So it was one of those moves where, you know, it's a little risky, but, it, you know, it goes back to confidence thing I talked about earlier. Like, that's a big part of it for me. And I know you hear a lot of guys that kill every year good bucks talking about you got to believe in what you're doing. If you don't, if you're not confident in what you're doing, it's probably not going to work out, especially if you've been doing this a long time and you got pretty good gut instincts. You probably need to follow them. I can't tell you how many bucks I probably haven't killed over the years because I overthought things and didn't go with my gut. But that was a move. And that goes back to the mobile hunting thing now. It's like being, it's so easy for me to get down and move, you know, just down the hill or, you know, 100 yards down or whatever, and just check out that next secondary ridge point or that next ditch down there, that logging road that I can see. There's no way that I can shoot down there, but I can see it and it looks good. You know, that was a move that was risky, but I felt I went from probably, I would say like 30-40% confident that I was in the right area to, okay, that's the tree. I just had a big deer on a hot doe by me. Like, I don't know what else I have to see to tell me that I need to be here. And then, you know, I see the buck that I killed skirt me just out of range. And it was like, yeah, okay, so you didn't kill him tonight. You're killing him in the morning. There's no doubt about it. He's in here. There's a hot doe in here. Made the move and killed him. It wasn't really, I didn't feel like it was an accident, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and I don't feel like killing mature deer on public land. That doesn't happen on accident. That happens because, you know, you're not in the ball game. And it's one of those things you can't be too proud to admit that sometimes you're not in the ball game. Like if somebody's like, hey, how's it going? Well, I'm getting my ass kicked. I really need to do something different, because the first 2 days of that trip, I was really getting my ass kicked. I was like, dude, I can't find any deer. Like, this is not good. Like, I was about to go home with my tail tucked and I just ain't that kind of guy. So I was like, you know what, if this ain't working, find something that's basically the polar opposite. And somewhere, if that doesn't work, then you meet in the middle, find somewhere that's in the middle and make that right. happen. So that's kind of, that was the plan on that deer, and it worked out for me. So
well, you have to kind of look at it from a standpoint of, like, I do this with fishing all the time where I want to fish one way, and like I can look at a live scope or something like that, and I can see where the fish are.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, you could drop shot for them. I'm like, nope, gonna throw topwaters, gonna keep throwing topwaters until I have a fish bite. And like like, you gotta get it out of your head. Specifically with deer hunting, it's like, Chris, you had this, I think you and I talked about this, about a piece of public in Kentucky where you just said, like, I'm gonna start, keep walking until I find what I know I need to be seeing. And when I know I need to be seeing, that's when I'm gonna set up. And That's a tough pill to swallow when you go in and you think that this is what needs to happen, because this is what I did when I was scouting and all that kind of stuff. And then it, you know, goes foobar on you and you got to switch it all up.
Yeah.
It's hearing that takes me back to my first sit in Indiana last year. And essentially, like, I talked with Josh and Pierce and all these guys about, you know, a really good strategy, just going in, and I'm going in blind. And, you know, you get there, you set up, and I had little bucks coming by, but I was like, man, I just don't feel like I'm in it. Like, I'm seeing deer, I've got does and I've got little bucks, but I just don't feel like I'm where I need to be. I go up into this oxbow, you know, I scout my way in there. I'm like, okay, jump up a shooter with a couple of does and then find a giant pin oak that's raining. Mm-hmm. There's a good scrape under a beech tree, one of the only beech trees I found there. Had a great scrape under it. Hadn't really found a good scrape yet. I'm like, well, can it get better than this? Like, this is pretty good. Let's get up here and see what we see. And then ended up getting a shot. Of course, you know, man, that makes me realize that I started this year off how I basically ended last year. But I missed that deer.
We're moving forward.
We're gonna start calling me what's the movie Blow? That was freaking blew a chip shot there. Like there was no, that's one though that I was very, very pissed about because I don't know how I missed the deer. I haven't posted about it yet, but I missed a deer this past Friday and I know I got yarded. Like I know what happened, and at the height of my archery career, I was the shittiest yardage judger, literally ranked dead last in the world history books when it comes to yardage judging. So I'm like, you know, this sucks and it's tough, but that's me. The other one in Indiana, no idea. I knew he was my top pin, 21 yards, like it was a chip shot, and I have no idea how I missed the deer. I could have hit a little twig and just not seen it, but I didn't see it. So anyway, reminds me though, because I remember specifically telling myself, like, don't just sit here, man. Get your ass down and go. You know, if you're not feeling it, go. You know, and you can't always just move around and every time, you know, you go 40 minutes without seeing a deer. Time to move, but like you gotta feel that confidence, and that and that confidence comes from something. And if you don't have it, well, there's a reason. Generally,
exactly.
Unless you're a basket case like me, which Josh could go on about for three decades, but you know, it gets rough. I'm actually proud of him for putting up with me. I need counseling when it comes to deer hunting, man, because I'm like, do you think like it can never just go right how you plan? Like, there's always all these variables. It's like, come on, man.
Yeah, that's like, I mean, I'll be honest, I run a ton of cameras on public, and I have yet to even not kill a buck that I have on camera. I have yet to even hunt an area that I'm running cameras. That's how scatterbrained I get. But, you know, it comes down to, you know, I've got I'm still getting intel in those areas every year of bucks, so that if I get hard up for one, you know, I know there's deer in there. There's cameras are there every year. But I like hot sign, man. That's where, you know, I don't, and it goes back to, you know, so many guys want it to happen the way they want it to happen, and they hunt the deer where they think the deer should be. That's not going to work very well for you. You're going to figure that out pretty quick after you sit a few times and don't see anything. You need to hunt the deer where they are. And especially early and late season when it's a food-based movement, if you're not hunting hot sign, you might as well be sitting in a dang truck. I mean, it's you know, you can't hunt them, oh, I think that they should be here, or this spot has white oaks, or it has, you know, a good hub with, you know, leeward points looking over it, you know. Or leeward. But it's like, well, the sign's not there, so I don't care. Like, if I'm not going in and I'm not finding rubs that were made in the last 3 or 4 days, and I'm not finding feed sign, and I'm not hearing white oaks dropping and there's feed sign around them, and I'm not seeing 15 new scrapes that the bucks made because it's the first cold front of October and they're going to make scrapes, then I'm going to move on. And it's one of those things where think, oh, I'm wasting my 3 days to hunt because I didn't sit. No, you'd be wasting your 3 days by sitting somewhere where the deer are not currently at. If anything, you're just crossing spots off
you know, that aren't going to work, which is not an L. You're not taking an L in my book. By figuring out where they're not, it narrows down where they are pretty easily. Mm-hmm. So,
dude, the majority, me and Josh have this talk all the time because it's so frustrating. You pick like 10 spots on a map.
Oh, yeah.
In a WMA or whatever. 8 or 9 of them are going to suck. But then you find the one. Yep. Like, literally, scouting and deer hunting is, where do I not go today? Like, you're always ruling stuff out, constantly ruling things out.
Yeah.
It's frustrating, but that's literally the name of the game. I hate it. I get it's exactly what you said, though. I'll see a spot on a map and I'll be like, man, that looks so sexual. And then you go there and you're like, this is some bullshit. This
is stupid. Glad I just blew my legs out for nothing.
I literally
spent the whole day.
I had a spot in Indiana. There was going to be a booner here. Like, I had it all dreamed up perfectly. Nobody was going to walk this far. I think it was like a 3.7 mile walk one way.
Oh,
it was a trek, dude. I drugged my father-in-law. I think I did 14 miles, 14 and some change that day. And I drugged my 66-year-old father-in-law with me. And
oh, my God. Shame on you, dude.
We got all the way back there. And these damn boners from the private land had this big-ass mineral site, a big-ass wooden blind built in on the public. They had a four-wheeler trail going down it, and I'm like, you sons of bitches. Like, this, this is ruined.
I'd ask them if I could access from there.
Dude, I was so pissed. And then Josh and I had a gorgeous spot picked here in Ohio. And we get there, and, like, every tree is painted, ready to be put down and schwacked.
Oh, man.
And we're just sitting there. We're like, well, what the hell do we do now? Like, this this pisses me off. Now, 3 years from now, that could be the juice. But
that's where I'd be.
Dude, but that actually, that spot where the private land dorks got all their cocaine drug running shit going on, that's where I found that big ass shed this past season. So, this past scouting season. So I probably should have thrown some cams up.
I got me a pretty nice one there. I don't know if you can see the faces there.
Nice.
That's probably, I don't know, my second best shed ever.
That's really nice shed, man.
Yeah, I found that this week or this weekend when I was in Kentucky. So nothing like an in-season shed.
Yeah,
I was going to say that. That gives you some hope then.
Yeah, well, and it's funny. I ironically, that's probably my second biggest shed. My biggest shed to date came from the exact same ridge when I was 13 during youth turkey season down there.
Nice. So
you're talking 15 years ago almost, and there's still a big deer holding in there. So that's going to be one that I spend a lot of time at.
Some areas, man, they just produce big deer. I've got a place in Ohio where I hunt, and that's a nice one. Every year,
135-inch 6-point.
We'll take that.
Every year, and Chris and Josh have seen the pictures of these deer. There's nice deer there every single year, and it's just like they all concentrate in this area. And it's public running into private, and then it's public running into the public that no one's going to even try to access, which is why I think those deer get as big as they do sometimes. But
I don't really know why this area has so many big deer. I'll be honest with you. It's kind of overlooked, I feel like, because that's probably why, because you know, it ain't super far in, not for me anyway. Hell, it was a chip shot for me. It was an easy one, but there's a lot of big deer in there. So,
yeah, there are areas that just hold big deer. It's kind of like my goal on public. Charles Golson, also known as Chaz, talked about his strategy.
Have a story on that, but he killed a giant. Jeez, Pete.
Yes. But I mean, he has areas picked out for different times of the year. He knows in this area he can go early season. In this area, he can go early October. In this area, he can go mid-October, and that's where the bigger deer are holding up, which is kind of my goal as far as learning these different areas on public. And I'm, like you said earlier, I have multiple cams out on different places. And I'll leave them to soak. Sometimes I forget them. I still have cameras out from June of 22.
Was that the one on the power line you want me to come get for you?
that's where I thought you were.
Yeah, I was convinced you were at this.
I would be in the same state.
No, I saw that. I'm like, oh, if he's on that power line, I think he's not terribly far from those cameras.
No, I'm probably a couple hundred miles from there.
But I'm going to go there this weekend and pull those cameras. Hopefully they're still there. But
well, I got one I couldn't find from 2 years ago. I don't know. And I might have got stolen. Maybe that's why I couldn't find it. But I'm pretty convinced I just wasn't in the right spot. I can't find it anywhere. So one of these years I'll find it maybe, or I don't know. So
yeah, I'll see if those cams are still there this weekend or not. But yeah, my goal is to just find those areas that just hold larger deer kind of year after year, or just areas where they like to travel at certain times of the year. I feel like you see that quite often. I learned that just from hunting private. Like there are just certain areas where you can be at certain times of the year. And then there's going to be nice deer that roll through there.
You'll see every good deer in the area on that farm a certain couple weeks a year, it seems like.
Absolutely.
Learning so much about the food shifts last year, how you know, a certain grove of red oaks were good for 10 days, 15 days, a certain flat with white oaks, 6, 7, 8 days. Like, it's super depressing being a private land guy that sat and sat and sat and sat. And you're like, yeah, you wasted a bunch of time because they were never coming. They were not. Never coming. They started putting corn out. They came then. But even then, it's like, well, I hope the moon and the barometric pressure and the weather and the wind speed and the wind direction, all these things are perfect and nobody screws it up and it gets cold enough. And like, you got to have all these things going. It's like, my God, just put me somewhere where I can go move on the deer. I don't want property lines.
I feel that for sure. And you're talking about the changing food sources. That's a big thing for me, and it goes back to the historical intel with the cameras. In the big woods, man, it is really hard to stay on that food shift, and I that's part of where my historical data is coming in with the cameras. Is I ran 7 cameras within a quarter mile, a little more than a quarter mile, probably we'll say 2/3 of a mile radius last year in this same system. I had 7 cameras, which is a pretty good amount of cameras for public land in that small of a radius. I generally don't run that many in that small of an area, but you would see I had all the same bucks on camera, but it was all the same 3 or 4 that they were all, there was good. They were real good deer. I mean, you know, 140 class and up. There was one that was probably pushing 160 last year, but anyway, I had all them same deer on camera, but you would see them like, okay, the first 2 weeks of October, they were over here on this one camera. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, I had them predominantly on these 2 cameras that were pretty close together. And then as the season went on, you would see them move through this system. They stayed in the system all year, but you know, especially when you're bow hunting, if you're, you know, 200 yards off, you're not in a ball game even close. You might as well be 2 miles away. I mean, so you it was kind of interesting. You see that, and you know, that shift's got to be related to food because they're not moving that far. It's not a pressure aspect. I don't feel like moving them around. It's not a pecking order thing with the bucks, which one's dominant or whatever, because it was the same bucks every time on all those cameras. But you can kind of correlate that to, okay, from, you know, and I had them all summer doing that from summer to January till they shed. They were moving through this system, but I'd get them on 2 or 3 cameras for 2-3 weeks at a time, and then they wouldn't be there anymore.
So that's kind of something I'm looking back at now, like, okay, depending on what weekend or what time of year I'm down there, this is where they always were at. Like, I need to probably be over there.
Yeah.
You know, and because you can have an area. I mean, I guess if I drew an area around that, it probably wouldn't be, but maybe, you know, 1,000 acres tops. But, you know, in 1,000 acres, I mean, they can, there's so many different places they can hide out, especially in the mountains like that. I mean, they get down mm-hmm. to so many different draws and stuff. So, you know, I can see how that historical data also relates to that food shift too. So,
Oh yeah. Well, how long have we been at this?
Let me pull it up.
Almost an hour.
We still have another deer to talk about.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That one's pretty quick.
Chris, we're at 45 minutes. We're completely fine.
Okay. Try not to get yelled at by.
That was the perfect commercial break area. Hey, everybody. Rick here from Fueled by the Outdoors, and I'm here to tell you about a wonderful company, Satties, Custom Ammunition and Gunworks. Aaron Satterfield and his family have been turning out some awesome game loads lately. I've been using the Satties Fatties turkey loads, and I got to tell you, they stop a bird dead. Chris used a 20-gauge this year. I used a 12. Josh used a 20. And my son actually killed one with a 410 this year with one of the Satties loads. And my God, do they put the birds down like crazy. Aaron Satterfield and his family have a wide-ranging array of ammunition, custom game loads, predator loads, turkey loads, the Satties Fatty, and also they do gun work. Please get a hold of them with any questions that you have in terms of your custom ammunition needs. Go to SattiesLLC.com. That's SattiesLLC.com and tell them that Rick from Fueled by the Outdoors sent you. So we're coming right into your new deer. So tell us about the other deer.
All right. So the other deer, I don't have him with me. He's actually long story I won't get into, but he's at my Buckmaster scores. He's at his house in the freezer. We had a mishap. I'm an idiot and did not lay him in the freezer in a manner which he could score him once he was frozen. So he had to hang on to him and let him thaw out and then score him. And got to get him to the taxidermist this week. He didn't go much, but I haven't looked at his teeth very well yet. I think he's a 7 or 8 year old deer. I can say that pretty confidently. I've had pictures of that deer for, I think, 3 or 4 years. I have to look back and see for sure. That deer, obviously a mature deer. He came off of a 3 acre parcel, that my nice. Grandfather owns. Kind of been a goal. I hunted there a little bit, when I was starting in junior high. And I've hunted there pretty much my whole life. It's just a good place to go shoot a couple of does early season generally. I always run one camera there in this inside, you know, corner of this field. And, every year there's always one good deer on camera. Sometimes there's two, and sometimes there's a bunch of 3-year-olds that need a couple more years, you know, and they got potential. There's always decent deer around, and there's always usually one good one that I would shoot. So I was going to end up, as I killed that deer on Monday, and I had essentially Sunday and Monday to hunt, and that was it. And I was going to drive 2 hours north to some public, and it was public I wasn't real familiar with at all. And I was going to drive up there in the afternoon on Sunday and glass very lightly scout, because by the time I got there, it was going to be getting to prime time where you don't want to be walking around too much, really. But I was going to try to glass. And then Monday, I was going to burn the boot leather in the morning and try to find a spot to hunt in the evening. Well, it turns out we didn't have a babysitter lined up for Monday because my wife had to work and I had the day to hunt, but we didn't have anybody that could watch our daughter. So on Sunday, I didn't get an answer on somebody that could babysit for Monday for me to even hunt. So I didn't know if I was even going to get to hunt now on Monday. I was like, man, I don't know if I'm even going to get to hunt. Like, you know, so be it, whatever. It's early still. You know, Sunday, I didn't get an answer until about 2:30 in the afternoon, 3 o'clock, something like that, of who could even watch her the next day to free me up. So I was like, well, hell, it's 3 o'clock. I'm not going to drive 2 hours north now and get up there at 5 o'clock with no intel and basically a little over, 24 hours to get the job done. So I thought, well, maybe I just won't hunt at all. Maybe we'll just wait. It's not meant to be. Can't make it happen. And then I thought to myself, well, if I were to try to force something, if I were to get really aggressive and roll the dice like I love to do so much, and usually my dice are pretty poor, but we'll roll them anyway. I was like, what could I do? And I thought, well, my grandpa's, it lays out, and I wish I could have a map of it to show you. No, I don't have to worry about anybody stealing the spot because it ain't worth stealing, to be honest with you, most of the time. But basically, it's a very thick, 3-acre woodlot. Most of the trees at this point, it's been there so long, there's a lot of ash and hickory nut trees, and there's kind of scrub trees. Most of the trees are dead to the point where I would not climb them, or they've already fallen over. So it's essentially a big bedding area. And there's a big 30 or 40 acre woodlot that no one is allowed to hunt to the west of there, and a fence line that connects the two. Generally, most of the deer are in the big timber to the west, and east wind's blowing right into it. You cannot hunt my grandpa's. That inside corner, you're going to blow every deer out because they come from inside corner to inside corner, and they use the fence line as their funnel, essentially. Well, the only reason I could pull this off was because the crops were all three of the fields. The field to the southeast of my grandfather's up by his house was standing corn. The field to the south of where I sat up, where my set was, and to the north between the two woodlots, they were all standing corn. So I thought, well, if I walk in straight up, and normally I wouldn't do this because if the corn was down, it'd be a wide open field. But I said, if I walk up this inside edge of this corn on the south end of my grandpa's woods, an east wind is going to blow my wind straight down the backside of my grandpa's woods. And basically I'm going to get on the fence line and I'm going to be 10 yards off wind of that inside corner where those deer are going to filter out of that, the neighbor's a big timber block where they usually come out. And I thought, well, that's pretty dicey, but it probably will work because it was only 2 or 3 mile an hour winds anyway, I think. Yeah, that was the days where it was 85 degrees in the afternoon and, 40 in the morning. So I like those morning sits when it's like that early season. If it's cold in the morning, I don't care what the afternoon temp is, really. But I felt like the wind was calm enough, at least in the evening, that I could probably – it would swirl and, I might get busted, but – I'd rather it be calm than a stiff east wind blowing 10 yards off line, because if one of those deer doesn't do exactly what they're supposed to, I'm going to get busted for sure. So I rolled the dice. I picked a tree in that fence line, and I have permission. So that standing cornfield between my grandfather's woods and the big 20-acre woods, I've never had permission there before. But I got permission. The guy that farms, it's a good friend of mine, and he actually bought that strip of field. It's only 75 yards wide by about 400 yard long strip of standing corn, but he bought that and he said, yeah, you're good to shoot deer in that standing corn. I don't care. Like, knock yourself out. So I was able to expand my real estate basically by just this little corner of cornfield between these two woodlots. And I always, every time I've grown up hunting this place, every sit, I watch those deer come down that fence line, and I always say, man, if I could hunt that fence line, I would have killed every big deer I've ever seen on this property. Like, no doubt about it. And now that's in play for me. So I get in the fence line. There's one big tree I've looked at for years that I thought, man, that's the tree. That's a killing tree every year for the next 20, the rest of my life, basically. I can kill a big deer out of that tree if I can get in it. So I go right to it. I hung my first stick, and as soon as I stepped on the stick, I jumped about a 140 class 8-pointer, one of the biggest 8-pointers I've ever seen in my life, was bedded 40 yards from the tree that I decided to hunt. And he ran off, and I thought, well, this was not a good idea right off the rip, not a good idea. But I'm already here, and I got up 7 feet off the ground. The tree that I hunted was a huge walnut tree, probably the biggest walnut tree I've ever seen. I could barely get my arms around it. Matter of fact, I had to, when I put my platform up, I was at the very end of my cam buckle strap. When I hooked it on to the Versa button, I didn't have to cinch it down at all. It was maxed out. I barely made it by about an inch, less than an inch. But there was honeysuckle all around the base of the tree. So I thought, well, I'll just get up around the top of those honeysuckles where my knees are, you know, covered up by them. And this tree's big enough that it's as wide as my shoulders. I'm going to be covered up pretty good. I sat the rest of the night, and, you know, that place is always good when the corn's still up. It's good when they cut it too. If it's beans, it's not very good just because there ain't much there for them. If it's fresh cut corn, it's good, but standing corn, man, it's a sanctuary area, and they were stacked in there. I seen a good 3-year old that I passed, probably he actually was bigger than the deer I killed. But he was a young deer, probably 125, 130 class 8, came through about an hour before dark, went right where that big buck had went. And then I decided not to shoot the two does that came in at last light, right 7 yards under my tree, because I thought, well, there's a couple good bucks in here. I know that I need to come back tomorrow. Like, they're here right now. They're not leaving. Everything they need, food, cover, you know, everything is here for them. That big buck wasn't bumped hard. I just watched him bound off and go in the neighbor's timber. You could hear him stop in there. He never blew. I don't think he ever even saw me. I think he just heard something that shouldn't have been there. So I thought, I'm coming back tomorrow. I didn't shoot the does. Didn't want to blow it out. I got in 1 hour and 45 minutes before daylight on Monday, because I had to go so slow, and I actually took a set of loppers with me, because I don't know if you've ever tried to get in a fence row in, you know, any part of Ohio. It's all honeysuckle, and it is loud, and you cannot penetrate that stuff at all. It is god awful. And terrible. I thought, I'm 40 yards from bedded deer. I already know that, because I jumped the one that I wanted to kill. The one I came here to kill, is I've already busted him. So I thought, you know, maybe a bump and dump situation here where I ease off and he's not sure. It's early season. He's not sure what that was. He comes back tomorrow and surprise, it's game over. So I took a set of loppers in with me, and I cut every honeysuckle from the standing corn right to the base of the tree. I cut them real slow, real quiet, just enough to crawl on my hands and knees to the base of the tree. And I left everything in the tree the night before, because I'm like, dude, I'm coming back tomorrow. I cannot get this stuff down in the dark quietly. The doe's bedded like 60 yards from the tree that night. So I left everything in there. I got in there like almost 2 hours before legal, and I killed that deer at 8:30. He came in. There was 4 bucks by 8:30 that came in, all sub 20 yards. And they pretty much all stood up out of their beds and walked right by the tree. I watched all of them stand up. And he was the last one of that group, and came in and gave me the shot was really good, but I didn't think it was really good. Chris was one of the first people that I called. I actually let the deer lay for 6 hours, and he probably was dead 30 seconds after I shot him. I'm colorblind as hell, so I cannot see blood at all. Like, you might as well just forget about it.
Damn.
And standing corn to boot, probably the hardest stuff to find blood in, you know, other than canary grass or maybe cattails. So I shoot the deer and I hit him. I watched the video back, and that was a mistake, because it made me feel even worse about the shot. I knew I hit him high. I knew I wasn't very high in the tree, so I didn't have much angle on him at all. I pretty much shot. It's like, was basically like shooting a target in a backyard as far as the trajectory of the shot went. Hit him high, like real high, to the point where I was kind of surprised I didn't spine him, to be honest with you. So immediately thought, oh, I backstrapped him, but I didn't get a pass through. So that ruled that out pretty quickly too. And initially then I thought, oh, that was high shoulder, but I knew it was further back than the shoulder. I didn't shoulder him. So I called Chris. I said, well, the two positives is I don't think I shouldered him, and I don't think I backstrapped him, but I don't know what the hell I hit. Hopefully the artery in his back, maybe a lung, I don't know. And I didn't get a ton of penetration with my arrow, which really made me nervous. That was probably what I was sickest about. And when I say not a lot, I mean probably, well, I'd say 7 inches of arrow maybe was all I got in him. But it sounded good. I heard the diaphragm pop, which was that was like, I was like, man, that sounds good. You know, we all know that sound. And then despite watching the video 30 times, probably back, I never saw the deer mule kick. And I took him over. I went to pick my buddy up to help me track him and immediately showed him the video. And the first thing he said was, oh, he mule kicked. So immediately I'm like, well, that's a good sign. Like, generally speaking, a mule kick is a good sign. So we went out, and he was me and my dad, and my buddy Bo, we went out, and he was dead 50 yards from where I shot him. He tipped over immediately.
Where did you end up hitting him?
So I got double lung. I hit a rib, and luckily it deflected forward instead of back. So I didn't get liver and guts. I got hit the back of one lung, skipped off that rib, and it didn't go all the way through the second one, but it punctured the second one. And I clipped the artery in his back too. He was actually bleeding vertically, like 6-7 feet up the corn stalks. I'd never seen a deer bleed upward like that.
Wow.
But yeah, it was, if I would have just, and when I heard him stop, I thought he stopped inside the timber there in the neighbors, which I'm not allowed to go in without permission anyway. So I thought, well, I got to call this guy anyway to go get this deer. And I didn't want to go look for first blood even, because I thought, man, I cannot walk quietly in that standing corn. And if he's bedded over there, I don't want to bump him because it's, you know, 30 yards from where I thought I heard him. If I would have just gotten down and looked for first blood, I would have found the deer. But I just got straight down and went to the house to watch the video. And my dad was like, we come around the corner of the fence line, and he's like, there's two buzzards in the tree right there. And we found first blood immediately. And we're walking, and my dad goes, well, there's your arrow. And I said, well, Jesus Christ, there's a whole buck attached to him. What do you mean there's my arrow? The whole deer's laying there. And he's like, I'll be damned. Like, you know, he didn't go anywhere. But
that's awesome.
You know, I chalked that one up to, you know, I think I posted in the mobile hunter group a little bit of a tactic situation there. It was just the just off wind that you hear guys talk about. Andy May comes to mind immediately when you talk about just off winds. And Greg Litzinger's another guy. If guys are looking for other good guys better than me to listen to just off wind stuff, it doesn't matter where the wind's blowing necessarily in your tree. It matters where the wind's blowing, where you're going to shoot the deer. If it's blowing the general direction, it's not such an issue. If you know where your shot's going to be, you just make sure it's not blowing there. You could kill the deer. Essentially, my thought was every deer here is going to wind me if I don't kill it before it winds me, which was exactly what would have happened. If I didn't shoot that deer about exactly when I did, he was lip curling. I already saw the look in his eyes. You thought, oh shit, this is, you got about 10 seconds to decide if you're going to kill this. If you're going to kill this deer, you need to kill him. If not, he's going to make your day right here in a bad way. So that was essentially a just off win strategy, and obviously a really aggressive, strategy. I generally wouldn't try that this early in the year, but your first sit's your best sit. You hear that a lot too, and I'm a firm believer in that. If you know they're in there, you know there ain't no reason to go nowhere else. It goes back to confidence. I seen 4 deer and a 2, and I got in late Sunday night when I hunted. I got in late. I only hunted like less than 2 hours, 1 hour and 45 minutes of daylight was all I had left, and I seen 4 deer, and you know, one was a shooter buck, one was another good buck, you know. It's like, well, it's probably a safe bet right now. They're not moving far, and I saw that many deer in the last hour of daylight. There's pretty good chance I'm right in the middle of all of them. And, you know, sometimes you got to give up deer to kill deer, and I was willing to take that bet on that deal because you're right in the middle of them. You blow a couple out maybe, but you're going to be right there, and you're probably going to end up filling a tag. So I always tell guys too, like, you got to give up deer to get deer sometimes. And especially if you're hunting like the core bedding areas, like I know Josh been keying on those a lot early season, not going to give too much juice away. I don't want to give too much sauce away for guys, but you might want to look at some core betting areas early season, and that's going to vary, you know, depending on where you're at in the country, what those are. But you got to be, you can't be scared, man. If you're going to go in there and shoot a big deer, especially, and it goes back to like the small parcel thing. If that deer is comfortable in a small parcel, there's a reason for it. You're obviously right there with him because he's not, you know, big deer don't move far. It don't matter what time of year it is. They don't generally move very far, or mature deer, I should say. So I knew like there's a mature deer, because I had pictures of that deer this summer too. I knew he was in the area. I'm like, if he's holed up right here, he's not going anywhere. I need to go in there and I need to kill him. I don't care if I blow out. I didn't want to blow the 140 out. That wasn't really what I was looking to do, but you know, so be it. Like if you want to kill a mature deer or a big deer, they're not going to move far. Get aggressive, get in there amongst them. And if you got to give up three or four does or a couple 2 year olds or a 3 year old, that's fine. That's not the deer you're there to kill. You can't be scared to go in there. And that's the only way I think you're going to kill a big buck most of the time, especially on public land where they're getting pushed, or you get them pushed around a lot the first couple of weeks. And then they figure out, okay, I can hide here and I'm not leaving, because if I do, I will get killed by someone else. Like someone's out there. They find that little hole, that little cubby that they want to live in. You better get in there. You're not going to kill him. So that was mainly the strategy there, was to get in tight to him, set yourself up to do that, and play your just off wins. You know, it's dicey. I didn't even throw any milkweed because I was just going to get mad if I did. It's one of those deals where it goes back to confidence. Like you start throwing milkweed, you're like, oh shit. You know, every half hour you're like, God dang it, the wind's doing something different. This is a disaster. It's like, you're already in there. Do hunt your hunt, you know, put your chin down, pay attention. And you know that if the conditions are like that, you're not going to have long to get your shot off. That deer gives an opportunity, you bust his ass. That's what you got to do. You can't, mature deer ain't going to stand around and give you all this pretty footage. And, you know, all, I got 30 minutes of footage of him, you know, carousing around, chasing does and sparring with young bucks. That doesn't really happen very often.
Not real life.
No.
Yeah, no, that's maybe if you got, you know, I'm not going to drop any names, but you got a couple thousand acres of manicured property and you only shoot 7 year olds. Yeah, you might get some really good footage of a 5 year old buck acting like a goon. But generally speaking, if a deer that's over four gives you a shot, you better bust his ass.
It's funny you talk about not wanting to throw milkweed. There's been multiple times, both successful and unsuccessful, where I've tossed milkweed. And the whole time I'm just bitching, like, this is some bullshit. But yeah, I've noticed the successful hunts, they were lower wind speeds, like, we'll say 3 to 7, roughly, miles an hour. Yep. And there was always that calm down that last 45 minutes, hour, whatever, right?
Yeah.
And then you have that thermal switch. And then, like, there's nights like last night where I wanted to choke a kitten.
Dude, last night was terrible for me. It was a disaster.
Dude, the wind
was a disaster.
Name a direction, and the answer is yes, the wind blew that way. And it's at like 15 miles an hour.
Dude, like, I'm glad I'm stupid. Not the only one. Holy shit.
I was pissed off, and multiple times I'm like, you should just get down. But the thing is, what would have happened? What the hunting gods and Mother Nature would have done to me?
Oh, yeah. I already know.
I would have got down, got like, you know, a few hundred yards or the mile or whatever, and then it would have just went silent and I would have heard crickets and I would have wanted to choke somebody. Cause that's like that, like as soon as everything calms down, and then all of a sudden you can just start to feel the thermal suck downhill. It's like, all right, dude, like, keep your head on a swivel, because he just
like, you got out of the tree and you missed your opportunity you've been waiting for 6 hours aimlessly for.
I had just found a red oak grove that was dropping. Mm-hmm. We're finding a lot of red oaks getting pounded this year early for some reason.
Me too.
Explain it, but It's not like a big white oak thing, even though the chinkapins were loaded. So I found probably the best feed sign I've ever found in my life on this hillside, little secondary ridge. And dude, I get right, I'm on the backside of some, the public and the backside of some private that has like standing brown beans. And then, you know, it dumps into the public, and then there's a secondary ridge and it dumps down to some better private. And it's like, man, let's just edge up here. And dude, I look up and I'm like, oh my God, there's a beech tree with a giant scrape, like a fresh scrape with no leaves in it. And the wind is blowing leaves everywhere. Like this buck.
He was just there.
Like he's here. Like get in a tree, dude. And then every doe in Ohio was like, he'd be wandering me. And this little baby, I ran it off two or three times. I'd go like that and just freak the shit out of it. It would come back. And at one point, it was just my friend. Like, I'm convinced. So I took the kids for a drive. And there was a baby standing right next to the road. And we were talking to it. And I'm like,
is that the one Josh put the video up of?
I didn't video it, but the whole time I'm like, are you that little son of a bitch I talked to the other night with my kids? Because you won't go away.
Josh, like, was it you that just posted the video of the deer that I thought had EHD because it was like not acting like a deer?
Yep.
Silly.
Walking out, I stumbled upon, what day was that?
Oh,
was that last? That was last Thursday.
The night light deer.
Yeah, he had the floodlight on his head, like a whole damn floodlight on his head, the brightest headlamp I've ever seen in my life. Are you scared of stuff in the dark? I mean, what are you?
No, it's thick back there.
Oh, okay.
He's worried about the bears.
That's one of the best headlamps on the market, dude.
Yeah, it better be. I mean, good Lord Almighty.
The pictures we're able to take because of that thing.
Yeah, I might have to borrow it here.
Way down, and you've just got like this cool light across the whole plate. Oh, it's awesome.
So I'm convinced. So I'm walking out, and I don't have the light turned up all the way at the time as I'm walking out. And then I actually have it turned down low on its low setting. And I'm walking out on this trail along this ridge. And on like to my right is like a drop off down into a creek. But I know this trail goes, I can follow it down, and then there's a spot I can go down in the creek and then go follow the creek towards the parking lot. And so I'm following the trail, and then I see eyes, like, I don't know, 30 yards from me. And I'm like, oh, there's two deer there. And I'm starting to walk up, and they're like not moving. So I turn my headlight up a little bit. I can see it's a doe and a fawn. Well, the doe turns around and trots off. She doesn't blow, but the fawn just stays there. So I turned my light up all the way, and I don't think she was moving because I was blinding her.
Yeah.
So I turn up all the way, and I start walking towards her, and she's like turning back around. I think one looking for her mom, and then but two also the light is so bright.
Yeah, but she couldn't see her mom.
No. I'm being serious. I probably could have walked up and pet that deer.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I was like, "What are you doing?" I'm like, "Go away!" I'm like, "What are you doing?" I'm trying to get to my car.
That's awesome. Yeah. So Seth,
yeah,
tell us, we probably should prepare people at some point. One day we'll be good podcasters, but today's not that day. Tell us your favorite thing you've learned roughly in the past year when it comes to buck hunting, whitetail deer hunting.
I should have prepared for this question for a long time because I knew this day would come one day, and I've heard this question asked on this podcast I don't know how many times, and here I am being the idiot without a good answer.
I guess we technically did prepare Seth. He's one of our 8.5 listeners.
Yes. Yeah, I'm the half, I'm a shell of a man. Well, I would say, man, and this goes back to kind of what we've already talked about the whole time, is, you know,
do not hunt until you are confident with what you're seeing. I mean, there is nothing wrong with walking around for 2 or 3 days, especially when you're going in blind. I mean, deer are not like turkeys where you can stand on a hill and put your ear out and give them a oh, and know whether or not they're there or not. It's not like that. You got to go out there. You got to burn boot leather. And if you're not confident and you're not seeing the sign that you need to see, keep moving. You're not going to waste 2-3 days is not wasted if two of it's walking around trying to find the sign. Because I can't tell you how many times I've spent 2 days walking. I was in the tree for 20 minutes and the deer that I'm after, or at least a, you know, a good amount of deer come right by the tree. I've been in the tree for 20 minutes. So the biggest thing I've learned, and you know, I don't care what method you use to mobile hunt, but get moving, stay mobile, go out there and find what you need to find. If you're not finding it, it's out there somewhere. You don't just say, well, this area ain't got no deer in it. This part of the state don't have no deer in it. Yeah, there's deer out there. There's deer everywhere. And there's big deer everywhere. I'm going to get grilled for saying that, but there's big deer everywhere. It's just whether or not you're going to go find them or not. And if I could tell the guys one thing, do not hunt until you find what you're looking for. And, you know, that has proven, like, you know, this weekend was a prime example, not to go down another rabbit hole, but I went to an area that I had never been before. I have pins dropped on it from, well, I lied. I've been there when I was about 12 or 13 years old and found that Mondo shed. But I had pins dropped there to check it out. And I thought, you know what? I'm not real keen on hunting that particular area. That I don't know that area real well. I don't want to hunt a morning hunt. I don't know what the hell I'm looking for yet. So I went in there pretty much blind. I had pins dropped there. I said, you know what? It's as good a day. I need to go in here and check this out. I went in there. I got probably lucky on the fact that the hot sign was there the same day I scouted it. But I went in. I found, I don't know, 15 or 20 rubs that were still tacky. And I found 5 or 6 scrapes that had leaves. The bottom sides were still wet where they had just turned it over, like, you know, hours before I was there. And then I ended up, I was getting to an area where I thought, well, this might be where I need to probably set up because the sign was hot everywhere. 2 bucks come up a logging road, the same logging road that I happened to be standing on, right to me. The one was a good 2-year-old and the other was a 135, 140 guy. I thought he's about 130, but I watched the video back. He's a lot bigger than I realized. Buck, and I came to full draw at 32 and realized that he broke his whole right side off, so I didn't shoot him. Just my luck. But that goes back to, you know, that was a little bit lucky there on just the sign happening to be there the first spot I checked. But I didn't anticipate finding any sign. I'll be honest. I went in there like I was going to look at it and see. I really didn't expect to find any sign. But when you go in there and you find smoking hot sign and you see 2 bucks and you know, like, okay. And then I found that big Mondo shed again, another one in the same spot I did 15 years ago. I found another shed in there. It's like, okay, obviously there's something here. The bucks are actively here right now. I watched them go up the ridge and bed. Probably should hunt this. But it's that kind of stuff. Just if it's there, don't overthink it. Go with your gut. It's cost me a lot of deer over the years trying to, well, that doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, there's a lot of things that don't make sense in this world. And deer are wild animals, and they're another prime example of things that sometimes don't make sense. If the sign's there, hunt the damn deer. It's not that hard. Yeah. Hunt the damn deer. Don't say, well, you know, it could go this way, could go that way. Self-doubt will kill more goals than any, that's cliche saying, but self-doubt will kill more goals and more dreams than anything else in this world. And that is 100% relates to whitetail hunting.
If that's it's the there, truth, dude. Mm-hmm,
hunt, mm-hmm. If he's there, hunt his ass. Don't say, well, don't think of 6 reasons why when you've got 1 solid reason. You saw the damn deer. What else do you need to see? He's there. Sit up there until you kill his ass. Don't go, well, this spot could be better. You know, there's a lot of spots that could be better, but if it's there, hunt it. It's that simple. It's not rocket science.
Amen to that.
Absolutely.
So,
Chris and I had that conversation not long ago. I mentioned that to Chris, I want to say a few days ago.
Every day.
I was like, well, these bucks I'm hunting in Ohio, I'm like, they're here. I had to like talk myself, basically what you were just saying, Seth. I thought about going to another area, checking out some other cameras. I'm like, well, I'm already on. There's already deer here. I might as well just stay here and hunt these deer down. I'm like, I shouldn't leave deer to go find other deer. I was like, they're here. Just hunt them down.
That's funny that you talk about talking yourself through it. Mm-hmm. When Matt was over at my house and we were cleaning his doe, we were cutting her up.
Wait, did he tell you about why not to hunt where he was hunting and how many things that could go wrong?
Yeah. All the mobile presets and cell cams.
Oh, yeah. The place where the private's right there.
Oh, dude. So
the postcard guys.
Yes. Those are my boys. Those are my boys. They're going to get a postcard too.
We got to preface the Seth. Matt is like the most pessimistic hunter I've ever met. He will tell you every reason not to go in an area.
Oh, man.
Yeah. So, Seth, where can people find you?
Okay. So, my Instagram, everything that I post, for the most part, as far as photos, it goes right to Facebook too. My Instagram is Seth_Drake_NicheTV. And then my Facebook is just Seth Drake. Obviously I post quite a bit on the store, on my stories too, a lot of the shorter stuff. I'll be honest, in end season, the only thing you're going to see on either one of those is probably killing post. I'm not putting much else out. Now my stories, I'll show sign and stuff like that. And, you know, we'll do some videos on what we're kind of seeing and walking people through things that we're seeing, and moving accordingly. But yeah, we're pretty much just keeping it to killing post for the most part in season. So hopefully we got quite a few more of those coming up here in the next 2 weeks. So
you got a YouTube channel?
Yeah, we got Niche TV is up. I got to put this video together from the Ohio buck here. I should probably be working on that instead of continuing to try to kill other bucks, but I have a disease that will not be cured. So I'm hoping to get that video up in the next week and a half or so. That's going to be the first one. We're just going to start off with a kill video. That's everybody wants to see nowadays. Yep. Might as well start it off strong. And then, yeah, I mean, we got, I was hoping to have two bucks killed in a week. That didn't quite pan out for me this weekend in Kentucky, but, I'm hoping to have Kentucky and Michigan killed by the end of the month. So, 3 bucks in October would be a pretty decent month. And then hopefully November, we'll be in West Virginia. Probably going to rifle hunt over there. I don't know that I'll make it over there with my bow at all. And then, you know, if everything works out the way we plan, which it generally doesn't, but in a perfect world, we'll be killing there during rifle season and looking to go to Tennessee for rifle season in December. And there's a chance that Illinois possibly could happen in November too, if bucks get killed when they are supposed to be killed on my
they
calendar.
What they're supposed to be, right?
Yeah, if they would just quit breaking my heart and I could see more than a deer every six, then you know that would be awesome.
But, hey, that's still good though.
Michigan's going to be a tall order. I'm not going to lie to you. Michigan public land is going to be a tall order. So I'm hoping to shoot. I'm going to hold out in Kentucky for something that's 150 plus because I think I got that caliber of deer that I can hunt there. And then Michigan and West Virginia, I said, you know, I want to kill a Pope and Young or better on public in both of those states, which is a pretty tall order, but that would be the first buck I killed this year. He didn't quite make Pope. He missed it by a couple inches. Inches or whatever, you know. It's more about the deer itself, I guess, and how you got him. But I'm hoping to kill at least 4 bucks this year. So
man.
Well, brother, we really appreciate you coming on as a guest, and
I appreciate you guys having me.
look forward to having you at the Mobile Hunters Expo
this year.
And look forward to following your season.
Yeah, I appreciate it, guys.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Well, Rick, you want to take us home?
Yeah. Guys, if you have the ability to get somebody in the outdoors in the coming weeks, please do so. As you're listening to this on the way to your tree stand, if you're in Kentucky, be wearing your Hunter's Orange this weekend. It is kids weekend, and the following weekend is muzzleloader, so be sure to wear your Hunter's Orange. Other than that, this has been Fueled by the Outdoors. We've been your hosts, Rick Cates, Chris Leppert, and Josh Luck, and tonight we've been joined by Seth Drake of Niche TV. I went the whole damn episode without saying it the other way. Niche TV. Guys, have a great evening. Talk to you later. Bye.
See ya.
See ya.